I smiled at him, my brightest smile. Look at us after all these years, Sam. I'm living with a fairy. I've got a vampire boyfriend. You're dating a werewolf who cracks skulls. Would we ever have thought we'd say this the first day I came to work at Merlot's? Sam leaned forward and briefly put his hand over mine. And just then, Pinky herself came by the table to ask us how we'd liked the food. I pointed to my nearly empty plate. I think you can tell we did, I said, smiling at her. She grinned back. Pinky was a big woman who clearly enjoyed her own cooking. Some new customers came in, and she went off to seat them. Sam took his hand back and began working on his food again.
I wish,
Sam began, and then he closed his mouth. He ran a hand through his red-gold hair. Since he'd had it trimmed so short, it had looked tamer than usual until he tousled it. He laid his fork down, and I noticed he'd managed to dispose of almost all his food, too. What do you wish? I asked. Most people, I'd be scared to ask them to complete that sentence. But Sam and I had been friends for years.
I wish that you would find happiness with someone else, he said.
I know, it's none of my business. Eric does seem to really care about you, and you deserve that.
He does, I said. He's what I've got, and I'd be real ungrateful if I weren't happy with that. We love each other. I shrugged in a self-deprecating way. I was uncomfortable with the turn of the conversation. Sam nodded, though a wry twist to the corner of his mouth told me, without even hearing his thoughts, that Sam didn't think Eric was such an object of worth. I was glad I couldn't hear all his thoughts clearly. I thought Janilyn was equally inappropriate for Sam. He didn't need a ferocious, anything-for-the-packmaster kind of woman. He needed to be with someone who thought he was the greatest man around. But I didn't say anything. You can't say I'm not tactful. It was dreadfully tempting to tell Sam what had happened the night before, but I just couldn't. I didn't want to involve Sam in vampire shit any more than he already was, which was very little. No one needed stuff like that. Of course, I'd worried all day about the fallout from those events. My cell phone rang while Sam was paying his half of the bill. I glanced at it. Pam was calling. My heart leaped into my throat. I stepped outside the diner.
What's up?
I asked, sounding just as anxious as I really was.
Hello to you, too.
Pam, what happened? I wasn't in the mood for playfulness.
Bruno and Corinna didn't show up in New Orleans for work today, Pam said solemnly. Victor didn't call here because, of course, there was no good reason for them to come up here.
Did they find the car?
Not yet. I'm sure the highway patrol officers have put a sticker on it today, asking the owners to come and remove it. That's what they do, I've observed.
Yes, that's what they do.
No bodies will appear, especially since after the downpour of last night, there won't be a trace.
Pam sounded smug about that.
No blame can attach to us.
I stood there, phone to my ear, on an empty sidewalk in my little town, the streetlight only a few feet away. I'd seldom felt more alone.
I wish it had been Victor, I said from the bottom of my heart.
You want to kill someone else? Pam sounded mildly surprised.
No, I want it to be over. I want everything to be okay. I don't want any more killing at all.
Sam came out of the restaurant behind me and heard the distress in my voice. I felt his hand on my shoulder.
I have to go, Pam. Keep me posted.
I shut the phone and turned to face Sam. He was looking troubled, and the light streaming from overhead cast deep shadows on his face.
You're in trouble, he said.
I could only keep silent.
I know you can't talk about it, but if you ever feel like you have to, you know where I am, he said.
You too,
I said, because I figured with a girlfriend like Janilyn, Sam might be in almost as bad a position as I was.
Chapter 5. The phone rang while I was in the shower Friday morning.
Since I had an answering machine, I ignored it. As I was reaching out for my towel with my eyes shut, I felt it being thrust into my hand. With a gasp, I opened my eyes to see Claude standing there in his altogether.
"Phone's for you," he said, handing me the portable phone from the kitchen.
He left. I put it to my ear automatically.
"Hello?"
I said weakly. I didn't know what to think about first. Me seeing Claude naked, Claude seeing me naked, or the whole fact that we were related and naked in the same room.
"Sookie, you sound funny,"
said a faintly familiar male voice.
"Oh, I just got a surprise," I said. "I'm so sorry. Who is this?"
He laughed, and it was a warm and friendly sound.
"This is Remy Savoy, Hunter's dad," he said.
Remy had been married to my cousin Hadley, who was now dead. Their son, Hunter, and I had a connection that we needed to explore. I'd been meaning to call Remy to set up a playdate for me and Hunter, and I chided myself now for putting it off.
"I hope you're going to tell me that I can see Hunter this weekend," I said. "I've got to work Sunday afternoon, but I have Saturday off, tomorrow that is."
"That's great. I was going to ask you if I could bring him over this evening, and maybe he could spend the night."
That was a lot of time to spend with a kid I didn't know. More important, a kid who didn't know me.
"Remy, do you have special plans or something?"
"Yeah, my dad's sister died yesterday, and they've set the funeral for tomorrow morning at 10, but the visitation is tonight. I hate to take Hunter to the visitation and the funeral, especially considering, you know, his problem. It might be pretty hard on him. You know how it is. I can't ever be sure what he'll say."
"I understand." And I did. A preschool telepath is tough to be around. My parents would have appreciated Remy's predicament.
"How old is Hunter now?"
5. Just had a birthday. I was worried about the party, but we got through that okay.
I took a deep breath. I told him I'd help out with Hunter's problem.
"Okay, I can keep him overnight."
"Thanks. I mean, really thanks. I'll bring him over when I get off work today. That okay? We'll be there about 5:30.
I would get off work between 5 and 6, depending on my replacement being on time and how full my tables were. I gave Remy my cell number.
"If I'm not home, call my cell. I'll be back here as soon as I can. What does he like to eat?"
We talked about Hunter's routine for a few minutes, and then I hung up. By then, I was dry, but my hair was hanging in damp rat tails. After a few minutes with the blow dryer, I set off to talk to Claude once I was securely dressed in my work clothes.
"Claude!"
I yelled from the bottom of the stairs.
"Yes?"
He sounded totally unconcerned.
"Come down here!"
He appeared at the head of the stairs, his hairbrush in his hand.
"Yes, cousin?"
"Claude, the answering machine would have picked up the phone call. Please don't come in my room without knocking, and especially don't come in my bathroom without knocking."
I would definitely employ the door lock from now on. I didn't think I'd ever use it before.
"Are you a prude?"
He seemed genuinely curious.
"No!"
But after a second, I said,
"But maybe compared to you, yes!
I like my privacy. I get to decide who sees me naked. Do you get my point?"
"Yes. Objectively speaking, you have beautiful points."
I thought the top of my head would pop off.
"I didn't expect this when I told you that you could stay with me. You like men."
"Oh, yes. I definitely prefer men. But I can appreciate beauty. I have visited the other side of the fence."
"I probably wouldn't have let you stay here if I'd known that," I said. Claude shrugged as if to say, "Wasn't I smart to keep it from you then?"
"Listen,"
I said, and then stopped because I was rattled.
No matter what the circumstances, seeing Claude naked, well, your first reaction wouldn't be rage either.
"I'm going to tell you a few things, and I want you to take me seriously."
He waited, brush in hand, looking only politely attentive.
"Number 1, I have a boyfriend, and he's a vampire, and I'm not interested in cheating on him, and that includes seeing other guys naked. In my bathroom,"
I tacked on hastily, thinking of twoies of all sorts.
"If you can't respect that, you need to leave, and you'll just have to cry all the way home. Number 2, I'm having company tonight.
A little kid I'm babysitting, and you better act appropriate around him. You picking up when I'm laying down?
No nudity, be nice to the human kid.
Right.
Is the child yours?
If he were mine, I'd be raising him. You can bet your money. He's Hadley's. She was my cousin, the daughter of my Aunt Linda. She was the girlfriend of Sophie Ann. You know, the former queen? And she became a vampire eventually. This little boy, Hunter, is the son Hadley had before all that happened to her. His dad's bringing him by.
Was Claude related to Hadley?
Yes, of course, and therefore to Hunter. I pointed that out.
I like children,
Claude told me.
I'll behave, and I'm sorry to have upset you.
He gave a stab at sounding contrite. Funny, you don't look sorry. At all.
I'm crying inside,
he said, smiling a wicked smile. Oh, for goodness sake, I said, turning away to complete my bathroom routine alone and unobserved. I'd calmed down by the time I got to work. After all, I thought, Claude has probably seen a gazillion people naked in his time. Most soups didn't think nudity was any big deal. The fact that Claude and I were distantly related, my great-grandfather was his grandfather, wouldn't make any difference to him. In fact, it wouldn't make any difference to most of the soups. So, I told myself stoutly, no big deal. When I hit a slow time at work, I called Eric's cell and left a message to tell him I was expecting to babysit a child that night. If you can come over, great, but I wanted you to know ahead of time that someone else will be here, I told the voicemail. Hunter would make a pretty effective chaperone. Then I thought about my new upstairs roomer. Plus, I kind of forgot to tell you something the other night, and probably you aren't going to like it much. Also, I miss you. There was a beep. My message time was up. Well, good. There was no telling what I would have said next. The tracker, Heidi, was supposed to arrive in Bonton tonight. It seemed like a year since Eric had decided to send her over to check my land. I felt a little concerned when I thought of her arrival. Would Remy think Hunter attending the funeral was so bad if he knew who else was dropping by my house? Was I being irresponsible? Was I putting the child at risk? No, it was paranoid to think so. Heidi was coming to scout around in my woods. I had thrown off my niggling worry by the time I was preparing to leave Merlot's. Kennedy had arrived to work for Sam again because he'd made plans to take the were-girl, Janilyn, to the casinos in Shreveport and out to dinner. I hoped she was real good to Sam because he deserved it. Kennedy was contorting herself in front of the mirror behind the bar, trying to discern a weight loss. I looked down at my own thighs. Janilyn was really, really slim. In fact, I'd call her skinny. God had been generous with me in the bosom department, but Janilyn was the possessor of little apricot-like boobs she showed off by wearing bustiers and tank tops with no bra. She gave herself some attitude and altitude by wearing fantastic footwear. I was wearing Keds. I sighed.
Have a nice night, Kennedy told me brightly, and I straightened my shoulders, smiled, and wiggled my fingers goodbye.
Most people thought Kennedy's big smile and good manners had to be put on, but I knew Kennedy was sincere. She'd been trained by her pageant queen mom to keep a smile on her face and a good word on her lips. I had to hand it to her. Danny Prideaux didn't faze Kennedy at all, and I felt like he'd make most girls pretty nervous. Danny, who'd been brought up to expect the world to beat him down so he better throw the first punch, lifted a finger to me to second Kennedy's farewell. He had a Coke in front of him because Danny didn't drink on duty. He seemed content to play Mario Kart on his Nintendo DS or to simply sit at the bar and watch Kennedy work. On the other hand, lots of men would be nervous about working with Kennedy since she'd served time for manslaughter. Some women would be, too. But I had no problem with her. I was glad Sam had stepped up for her. It's not that I approve of murder, but some people just beg to be killed, don't they? After all I'd been through, I was forced to simply admit to myself that I felt that way. I got home about 5 minutes before Remy arrived with Hunter. I'd had just enough time to pull off my work clothes, toss them in the hamper, and put on a pair of shorts and a t-shirt before Remy knocked at the front door.
I looked through the peephole before I opened the door, on the theory that it's better to be safe than sorry.
"Hey, Remy,"
I said. He was in his early 30s, a quietly good-looking man with thick, light brown hair. He was wearing clothes suitable for an evening visitation at a funeral home, khakis, a white and brown striped broadcloth shirt, polished loafers. He'd looked more comfortable in the flannel and jeans he'd been wearing the first time I'd met him. I looked down at his son. Hunter had grown since I'd seen him last. He had dark hair and eyes like his mother, Hadley, but it was too early to say who he'd favor when he grew up. I squatted down and said, "Hi, Hunter." I didn't say anything out loud, but I smiled at him. He'd almost forgotten. His face lit up.
"Aunt Sookie,"
he said. Pleasure ran through his head, pleasure and excitement.
"I have a new truck,"
he said out loud, and I laughed. "You gonna show it to me? Come on in, you two, and let's get you settled."
"Thanks, Sookie," Remy said.
"Do I look like my mom or dad?"
Hunter asked.
"Why?" Remy was startled.
"That's what Aunt Sookie says."
Remy was used to little shocks like this by now, and he knew it would only get worse.
"Yes, you look like your mom, and she was good-looking," Remy told him. "You're a lucky young man, son."
"I don't want to look like a girl," Hunter said doubtfully.
"You don't."
"Not a bit," I said. "Hunter, your room is right here." I indicated the open doorway. "I used to sleep in this room when I was a kid," I said. Hunter looked around, alert and cautious. But the low twin bed with its white bedspread and the old furniture and the worn rug by the bed were all homey and unthreatening.
"Where will you be?" he asked.
"Right here, across the hall," I told him, opening the door to my room. "You just call out and I'll come a-running. Or you can come climb in bed with me if you get scared in the night." Remy stood, watching his son absorb all this. I didn't know how often the little boy had spent the night away from his dad. Not too often, from the thoughts I was picking up from the boy's head. "The bathroom's the next door down from your room, see?" I pointed in. He looked into the old-fashioned room with his mouth hanging open. "I know it looks different from your bathroom at home," I said, answering his thoughts. "This is an old house, Hunter." The clawfoot tub and the black-and-white tiles were not what you saw in the rental houses and apartments Remy and Hunter had lived in since Katrina.
"What's upstairs?" Hunter asked.
"Well, a cousin of mine is staying up there. He's not home right now, and he comes in so late you may not even see him. His name is Claude."
"Can I go up there and look around?"
"Maybe tomorrow we'll go up together. I'll show you the rooms you can go into and the rooms that Claude is using."
I glanced up to see that Remy was looking from Hunter to me, and he didn't know whether to be relieved or worried that I could talk to his son in a way he could not.
"Remy, it's okay," I said. "I grew up and it got easier. I know this is going to be tough, but at least Hunter is a bright boy with a sound body. His little problem is just less straightforward than most other kids."
"That's a good way to look at it."
But Remy's worry didn't diminish. "You want a drink?" I said, not sure what to do with Remy now. Hunter had asked me silently if he could unpack his bag, and I told him, the same way, that unpacking was fine with me. He'd already unloaded a little backpack full of toys onto the bedroom floor.
"No, thank you. I got to get going."
It was unpleasant to realize that I spooked Remy in the same way his son spooked other people. Remy might need my help, and I could tell he thought I was a pretty woman, but I could also see that I gave him the creeps.
"Is the visitation in Red Ditch?"
I asked. That was the town where Remy and Hunter lived. It was about an hour and a quarter's drive southeast from Bonton.
"No, in Houma. So this is kind of on the way. If you run into any problems, just call my cell and I can come pick him up on the way home. Otherwise, I'll stay the night in Homer, go to the funeral at 10 tomorrow, stay for the lunch at my cousin's home afterward, and pick Hunter up later in the afternoon, if that suits you."
"We'll be fine," I said, which was sheer bravado on my part.
I hadn't taken care of kids since I'd sat with my friend Arlene's youngins way back when. I didn't want to think about that. Friendships that end bitterly are always sad.
Those kids probably hated me now.
I've got videos we can watch, and a puzzle or two, and even some coloring books.
Where?
Hunter asked, looking around like he expected to see a Toys R Us. You say goodbye to your daddy, and we'll go looking for him, I told him.
Bye, Dad,
Hunter said, waving a casual hand at Remy. Remy looked nonplussed.
Want to give me a hug, champ?
Hunter held up his arms, and Remy picked him up and swung him around. Hunter giggled. Remy smiled over the child's shoulder.
That's my boy,
he said.
Be good for your old Sookie. Don't forget your manners. I'll see you tomorrow.
He put Hunter down.
Okay,
Hunter said, quite matter-of-factly. Remy had been expecting a big fuss since he'd never been away from the boy for so long. He glanced at me, then shook his head with a smile. He was laughing at himself, which I thought was a good reaction. I wondered how long Hunter's calm acceptance would last. Hunter looked up at me.
I'll be okay, he said,
and I realized he was reading my mind and interpreting my thought in his own way. Though I'd had this experience before, it had been filtered through an adult sensibility, and we'd had the fun of experimenting with combining our telepathy to see what happened. Hunter wasn't filtering and rearranging my thoughts as someone older would. After hugging his son again, Remy left reluctantly. Hunter and I found the coloring books. It turned out that Hunter liked to color more than anything else in the world. I settled him at the table in the kitchen and turned my attention to supper preparation. I could have cooked a meal from scratch, but I figured something that required little attention would be best the first time he stayed with me.
You like Hamburger Helper?
I asked silently. He looked up, and I showed him the box.
I like that,
Hunter said, recognizing the picture. He seemed to turn all his attention back to the turtle and butterfly scene he was coloring. The turtle was green and brown, approved turtle colors, but Hunter had gone to town on the butterfly. It was magenta, yellow, blue, and emerald green, and he hadn't finished it yet. I noted that staying in the lines was not Hunter's main goal, which was okay.
Kristen used to make Hamburger Helper,
he told me. Kristen had been Remy's girlfriend. Remy had told me he and Kristen had broken up over her inability to accept Hunter's special gift. Not so surprisingly, Kristen had come to believe Hunter was creepy. Adults had thought I was a weird kid, too, though I understood that now. At the time, it had been painful.
She was scared of me,
Hunter said, and he looked up for a second. I could understand that look.
She just didn't understand, I said. There aren't many people like us. Am I the only other one?
No, I know one other. A guy. He's a grown-up. He lives in Texas.
Is he okay?
I wasn't sure what Hunter meant by okay until I looked at his thoughts a little longer. The little boy was thinking of his dad and some other men he admired. Men who had jobs and wives or girlfriends, men who worked, regular men.
Yes, I answered. He found a way to make a living with it. He works for vampires.
You can't hear vampires.
I never met one.
Really? The doorbell rang. I'll be back in a minute, I told Hunter, and I walked swiftly to the front door. I used the peephole. My caller was a young vampire female, presumably Heidi, the tracker. My cell phone rang. I fished it out of my pocket.
Heidi should be there,
Pam said.
Has she come to the door?
Brown ponytail, blue eyes, tall.
Yes, you can let her in.
This was all very timely. I had the door open in a second.
Hi, come in, I said. I'm Sookie Stackhouse.
I stood aside. I didn't offer to shake hands. Vampires don't do that. Heidi nodded to me and stepped into the house, darting quick looks around her as if openly examining her surroundings were rude. Hunter came running into the living room, skidding to a stop as he saw Heidi. She was tall and bony and possibly a mute. However, now Hunter could test my words.
Heidi, this is my friend Hunter,
I said, and waited for Hunter's reaction. He was fascinated. He was trying to read her thoughts as hard as he could. He was delighted with the result, with her silence.
Heidi squatted.
"Hunter, you're a fine boy," she said to my relief. Her voice had an accent I associated with Minnesota.
"Are you going to be staying with Sookie for long?"
Her smile revealed teeth that were a little longer and sharper than the general run of humans, and I thought Hunter might be scared, but he eyed her with genuine fascination.
"Did you come to eat supper with us?" he asked Heidi.
"Out loud, please, Hunter," I said. "She's different from humans, but she's not like us either, remember?" He glanced at me as if he were afraid that I was angry. I smiled at him and nodded.
"You gonna eat supper with us, Miss Heidi?"
"No, thank you, Hunter. I'm here to go back in the woods and look for something we're missing. I won't disturb you any longer. My boss asked me to introduce myself to you and then go about my work."
Heidi stood, smiling down at the little boy.
Suddenly, I saw a pitfall right in front of me. I was an idiot, but how could I help the boy if I didn't educate him?
"Don't let her know you can hear things, Hunter," I told the child.
He looked up at me, his eyes amazingly like my cousin Hadley's. He looked a little scared.
Heidi was glancing from Hunter to me, obviously feeling that something was going on that she couldn't discern.
"Heidi, I hope you find something back there," I said briskly. "Let me know before you leave, please."
Not only did I want to know if she found anything, but I wanted to know when she was off the property.
"This should take no more than 2 hours," she said.
"I'm sorry I didn't tell you welcome to Louisiana," I told her. "I hope you didn't mind too much moving here from Las Vegas."
"Can I go back to color?" Hunter asked.
"Sure, honey," I said. "I'll be there in a minute."
"I gotta go potty,"
Hunter called, and I heard the bathroom door close.
Heidi said, "My son was his age when I was turned."
Her statement was so abrupt, her voice so flat, that it took me a moment to absorb what she told me.
"I'm so sorry," I said, and I meant it.
She shrugged.
"It was 20 years ago. He's grown now. He's a drug addict in Reno."
Her voice still sounded flat and emotionless, as if she were talking about the son of a stranger. Very cautiously, I said,
"Do you go see him?"
"Yes," she said. "I go to see him. At least, I did before my former employer sent me here." I didn't know what to say, but she was still standing there, so I ventured another question.
"Do you let him see you?"
"Yes, sometimes. I called an ambulance one time when I saw he'd overdosed. Another night, I saved him from a vamp blood addict who was going to kill him." A herd of thoughts thundered through my head, and they were all unpleasant. Did he know the vampire watching him was his mother? What if he'd OD'd in the daytime when she was dead to the world? How would she feel if she wasn't there the night his luck finally ran out? She couldn't always be on hand. Could it be he'd become an addict because his mother kept popping up when she should be dead?
"In the old days," I said, because I had to say something, "vampires' makers left the area with the new vamps as soon as they were turned to keep them away from their kin who'd recognize them."
Eric and Bill and Pam had all told me that.
"I left Las Vegas for over a decade, but I returned," Heidi said. "My maker needed me there. Being part of the world isn't as great for all of us as it is for our leaders. I think Victor sent me to work for Eric in Louisiana to get me away from my son. I wasn't any use to them, they said, as long as Charlie's troubles were distracting me. But then again, my skill in tracking was only discovered when I was finding the man who sold bad drugs to Charlie."
She smiled a little, and I knew what kind of end that man had met. Heidi was spooky in the extreme.
"Now, I'll be going to the back of your property to see what I can find. I'll let you know when I'm through."
Once she'd walked out the front door, she vanished into the woods so swiftly that by the time I went to the back of the house to look out, she'd melted into the trees. I've had a lot of strange conversations, and I've had some heart-wrenching conversations, but my talk with Heidi had been both. Fortunately, I had a couple of minutes to recover while I served our plates and monitored Hunter's hand-washing. I was glad to discover that the boy expected to say a prayer before he ate,
and we bowed our heads together. He enjoyed his hamburger helper and green beans and strawberries. While we ate, Hunter told me all about his father, by way of table conversation. I was sure Remy would be horrified if he could hear the tell-all approach Hunter took. It was all I could do not to laugh. I guess the discussion would have seemed strange to anyone else, because half of it was mind to mind, and half of it was spoken. Without any reminder from me, Hunter took his plate from the table to the sink. I held my breath until he slid it onto the counter carefully.
"Do you have a dog?"
he asked, looking around as if one might materialize.
"We always give our scraps to the dog."
I remembered the little black dog I had seen running around the backyard of Remy's little house in Red Ditch.
"No, I don't," I told him. "You've got a friend that turns into a dog?"
he said, his eyes big with astonishment. "Yes, I do," I said. "He's a good friend." I hadn't counted on Hunter picking that up. This was very tricky.
"My dad says I'm smart,"
Hunter said, looking rather doubtful.
"Sure you are," I told him.
"I know it's hard being different, because I'm different too, but I grew up to be okay."
"You sound kind of worried, though,"
Hunter said. I agreed with Remy. Hunter was a smart little boy.
"I am. It was hard for me, growing up, because no one understood why I was different. People won't believe you."
I sat down in a chair by the table and pulled Hunter onto my lap. I was worried this was too much touching for him, but he seemed glad to sit there.
"People don't want to know that someone can hear what they're thinking. They don't have any privacy when people like us are around."
Hunter didn't exactly get privacy, so we talked about the concept for a while. Maybe that was over the head of most 5-year-olds, but Hunter wasn't the average kid.
"So is the thing out in the woods giving you privacy?" Hunter asked me.
"What?" I knew I'd reacted with too much anxiety and dismay when Hunter looked upset, too.
"Don't worry about it, honey," I said. "No, he's no problem."
Hunter looked reassured enough for me to feel that it was time to change the subject. His attention was wandering, so I let him scramble down. He began playing with the Duplos he'd brought in his backpack, transporting them from the bedroom to the kitchen with his dump truck. I thought of getting him some Legos for a belated birthday present, but I'd check with Remy first, get his okay. I listened in to Hunter while I was doing the dishes. I found out that he was as interested in his anatomy as most 5-year-olds are, and that he thought it was funny that he got to stand up when he peed and I had to sit down, and that he hadn't liked Kristen because she didn't really like him.
"She pretended to," he told me silently,
exactly as if he'd known when I was listening in to him. I'd been standing at the sink with my back to Hunter, but it didn't make any difference in our conversation, which was another strange feeling.
"Can you tell when I'm listening to your head?"
I asked, surprised.
"Yeah, it tickles," Hunter told me.
Was that because he was so young? Would it have tickled in my head, too, if I'd met another telepath when I was that age? Or was Hunter unique among telepaths?
"Was that lady who came to the door dead?"
Hunter said. He jumped up and ran around the table to stand by my side while I dried the skillet.
"Yes," I said. "She's a vampire." "Will she bite?"
"She won't bite you or me," I said. "I guess sometimes she bites people if they tell her that's okay." Boy, I was worried about this conversation. It was like talking about religion with a child without knowing the parents' preferences.
"I think you said you'd never met a vampire before?"
"No, ma'am," he said. I started to tell Hunter he didn't have to call me ma'am, but then I stopped. The better manners he had, the easier this world would be for him.
"I never met anything like that man in the woods, either."
This time, he had my undivided attention, and I tried hard not to let him read my alarm. Just as I was about to ask him careful questions, I heard the screen door to the back porch open, and then footsteps across the boards. A light knock at the back door told me that Heidi had returned from scouting in the woods, but I looked out the little window in the door to be sure. Yep, it was the vampire.
"I'm through,"
she said when I opened the door. "I'll be on my way." I noticed Hunter didn't run to the door as he had last time. He was behind me, though. I could feel his brain buzzing. He was not exactly scared, but anxious, as most children are about the unknown. But he was definitely pleased that he couldn't hear her. I'd been pleased when I found out vampire brains were silent to me, too.
Heidi, did you learn anything?
I said hesitantly. Some of this might not be appropriate for Hunter to hear.
The fey tracks in your woods are fresh and heavy. There are two scents. They crisscross.
She inhaled with apparent delight.
I love the smell of fey in the night, better than gardenias.
Since I'd already assumed she'd detect the fey Basim had reported smelling, this wasn't a big revelation. But Heidi said there were definitely two fey. That was bad news. It confirmed what Hunter had said, too.
What else did you find?
I stepped back a little so she could see Hunter was behind me and tailor her remarks accordingly.
Neither of them is the fairy I smell here in your house.
Not good news.
Of course, I smelled many werewolves. I also smell a vampire. I think Bill Compton, though I've only met him once. There's an old C-O-R-P-S-E and a brand new C-O-R-P-S-E buried due east from your house in a clearing by the stream. The clearing is in a stand of wild plums.
None of this was reassuring. The old C-O-R-P-S-E, well, I'd expected that, and I knew who it was. I spared a moment to wish Eric hadn't buried Debbie on my property. And if Bill was the vampire walking through the woods, that was all right, though it did make me worry that he was just roaming around brooding all night instead of trying to build a new life for himself. The new corpse was a real problem. Basim hadn't said anything about that. Had someone buried a body on my property in the last two nights, or had Basim simply left it off his list for some reason? I was staring at Heidi while I thought, and she finally raised her eyebrows.
Okay, thanks, I said. I appreciate you taking the time. Take care of the little one, she said,
and then she was across the back porch and out the door. I didn't hear her walk around the house to her car, but I didn't expect to. Vampires can be mighty quiet. I did hear her engine start up, and she drove away. Since I knew my thoughts might worry Hunter, I forced myself to think of other things, which was harder than it sounds. I wouldn't have to do it long. I could tell my little visitor was getting tired. He put up the expected fuss about going to bed, but he didn't protest as much when I told him he could take a long bath first in the fascinating clawfoot tub. While Hunter splashed and played and made noises, I stayed in the bathroom, looking through a magazine. I made sure he actually cleaned himself in between sinking boats and racing ducks. I decided we'd skip washing his hair. I figured that would be an ordeal, and Remy hadn't given me any instructions one way or another on hair washing. I pulled the plug. Hunter really enjoyed the gurgle of the water as it went down the drain. He rescued the ducks before they could drown, which made him a hero.
I'm the king of the ducks, Aunt Sookie, he crowed.
They need a king, I said. I knew how stupid ducks were. Gran had kept some for a while. I supervised Hunter's towel usage and helped him get his pajamas on. I reminded him to use the toilet again, and then he brushed his teeth, not very thoroughly. 45 minutes later, after a story or two, Hunter was in bed. At his request, I left the light in the hall on, and his door was ajar an inch or two. I found I was exhausted and in no mood to puzzle over Heidi's revelation. I wasn't used to tending to a child, though Hunter had been easy to care for, especially for a little guy who was staying with a woman he didn't know well. I hoped he'd enjoy talking to me brain to brain. I also hoped Heidi hadn't spooked him too much. I hadn't let myself focus on her macabre little biography, but now that Hunter was asleep, I found myself thinking about her story. It was an awful pity that she'd had to return to Nevada during her son's lifetime. In fact, she now probably looked the same age as her son, Charlie. What had happened to the boy's father? Why had her maker required her return? When she'd first been turned, vampires hadn't yet shown themselves to America and the rest of the world. Secrecy had been paramount. I had to agree with Heidi. Coming out of the coffin hadn't solved all the vamp's problems, and it had created quite a few new ones.
I would almost rather not have known about the sadness Heidi carried around with her. Naturally, since I was my grandmother's product, such a wish made me feel guilty. Shouldn't we always be ready to listen to the sad stories of others? If they want to tell them, aren't we obliged to listen? Now I felt I had a relationship with Heidi based on her misery. Is that a real relationship? Was there something sympathetic about me that she liked? Something that called this story forth? Or did she routinely tell new acquaintances about her son, Charlie? I could hardly believe that. I figured Hunter's presence had triggered her confidences. I knew, though I didn't want to admit it to myself, that if Heidi remained so distracted by the issue of her junkie son, one night he'd get a visit from someone ruthless. After that, she'd be able to focus her whole attention on the wishes of her employer. I shivered. Though I didn't think Victor would hesitate a second to do such a thing, I wondered, would or could Eric? If I could even ask myself that, I knew the answer was yes. On the other hand, Charlie made a great hostage to ensure Heidi's good behavior, as in, if you don't spy on Eric, we'll pay Charlie a visit. But if that ever changed... All this Heidi meditation was by way of dodging the more immediate issue. Who was the fresh corpse in my woods, and who had planted it there? If Hunter hadn't been there, I would have picked up the phone to call Eric. I would have asked him to bring a shovel and come to help me dig a body up. That was what a boyfriend should do, right? But I couldn't leave Hunter alone in the house, and I would have felt terrible if I'd asked Eric to go out in the woods by himself, even though I knew he wouldn't think anything about it. In fact, probably he'd have sent Pam. I sighed. I couldn't seem to get rid of one problem without acquiring another. Chapter 6. At 6 in the morning, Hunter climbed onto my bed.
Aunt Sookie!
He said in what he probably thought was a whisper. Just this once, his using our mind-to-mind communication would have been better, but naturally he decided to talk out loud. Uh-huh. This had to be a bad dream.
I had a funny dream last night,
Hunter told me. Maybe a dream within a dream.
This tall man came in my room.
Did?
He had long hair like a lady.
I pushed up on my elbows and looked at Hunter, who didn't seem frightened. Yeah, I said, which was at least borderline coherent. What color?
Yellow,
Hunter said after a little thought. I suddenly realized that most five-year-olds might be a little shaky on the identification of colors. Uh-oh. So what did he do? I asked. I struggled to sit all the way up. The sky outside was just getting lighter.
He just looked at me, and he smiled, Hunter said. Then he went in the closet.
Wow, I said inadequately. I couldn't be sure, until dark, that is, but it sounded very much as though Eric was in the secret hiding place in my closet and dead for the day.
I gotta go pee,
Hunter said, and slid off my bed to scamper into my bathroom. I heard him flush a minute later, and then he washed his hands, or at least he turned on the water for a second. I collapsed back onto my pillows, thinking sadly of the hours of sleep I was doomed to lose. By sheer force of will, I got out of bed in my blue nightgown and threw on a robe. I stepped into my slippers, and after Hunter exited my bathroom, I entered it. A couple of minutes later, we were in my kitchen with the lights on. I went directly to the coffee pot, and I found a note propped on it. I recognized the handwriting immediately, and the endorphins flooded my system. Instead of being incredulous that I was up and moving so ungodly early, I felt happy that I was sharing this time with my little cousin. The note, which had been written on one of the pads I keep around for grocery lists, said, "My lover, I came in too close to dawn to wake you, though I was tempted. Your house is full of strange men. A fairy upstairs and a little child downstairs. But as long as there's not one in my lady's chamber, I can stand it. I need to talk to you when I rise." It was signed, in a large scrawl, Eric. I put the note aside, trying not to worry about Eric's urgent need to talk to me. I started the coffee to parking, and then I pulled out the griddle and plugged it in.
I hope you like pancakes, I told Hunter, and his face lit up.
He put his orange juice cup down on the table with a happy bang, and juice slopped over the edge. Just as I was about to give him a long look, he jumped up and fetched a paper towel. He took care of the spill with more vigor than attention to detail, but I appreciated the gesture.
I love pancakes, he said. You can make them? They don't come out of the freezer?
I hid a smile. Nope, I can make them. It took about 5 minutes to mix up a batch, and by then the griddle was hot. I put on some bacon first, and Hunter's expression was ecstatic.
I don't like it floppy, he said,
and I promised him it would be crisp. That was the way I liked it, too.
That smells wonderful, cousin, said Claude.
He was standing in the doorway, his arms spread wide, looking as good as anyone can look that early in the morning. He was wearing a maroon University of Louisiana at Monroe t-shirt and some black workout shorts.
Who are you?
Hunter asked.
I'm Sookie's cousin, Claude.
He has long hair like a lady, too,
Hunter said to me silently. He's a man, though, just like the other man. Claude, this is another cousin of mine, Hunter, I said. Remember I told you he was coming to visit?
His mother was...
Claude began, and I shook my head at him. Claude might have been about to say any number of things. He might have said, the bisexual, or the one the albino Waldo killed in the cemetery in New Orleans. These would both have been true, and Hunter needed to hear neither of them.
So we're all cousins, I said. Were you hinting around that you wanted to eat some breakfast with us, Claude?
Yes, I was,
he said gracefully, pouring himself some coffee from the pot without asking me.
If there's enough for me, too. This young man looks like he could eat a lot of pancakes.
Hunter was delighted with this idea, and he and Claude began topping each other on the number of pancakes they could consume. I was surprised that Claude was so at ease with Hunter, though the fact that he was charming the child effortlessly was no surprise to me. Claude was a professional at charming.
Do you live here in Bon Ton, Hunter? Claude was asking.
No,
said Hunter, laughing at the absurdity of such an idea.
I live with my daddy.
Okay, that was enough sharing. I didn't want anyone supernatural knowing about Hunter, understanding what made him special. Claude, would you get out the syrup and the molasses? I said. It's in the pantry over there. Claude located the pantry and brought out the log cabin and the Br'er Rabbit. He even opened both bottles so Hunter could smell them and pick which one he wanted on his pancakes. I got the pancakes on the griddle and made some more coffee, pulling some plates out of the cabinets and showing Hunter where the forks and knives were so he could set the table.
We were a strange little family grouping, two telepaths and a fairy.
During our breakfast conversation, I had to keep each male from knowing what the other was, and that was a real challenge. Hunter told me silently that Claude must be a vampire because he couldn't hear Claude's thoughts, and I had to tell Hunter that there were some other people we couldn't hear, too. I pointed out that Claude couldn't be a vampire because it was daytime, and vampires couldn't come out in the daytime.
There's a vampire in the closet, Hunter told Claude. He can't come out in the daytime.
Which closet would that be?
Claude asked Hunter.
The one in my room. You want to come see?
Hunter, I said, the last thing any vampire wants is to be disturbed in the daytime. I'd leave him alone.
You're Eric?
Claude asked. He was excited by the idea of Eric being in the house. Damn.
Yes, I said. You know better than to go in there, right? I mean, I don't have to get tough with you, right?
He smiled at me.
You tough with me? He said mockingly. Ha, I'm Fay. I am stronger than any human.
I started to say, so how come I survived the war between the Fae and so many fairies didn't?
Thank God I didn't.
The minute after, I knew how good it was that I choked on those words, because I could see by Claude's face that he remembered who died all too well. I missed Claudine, too, and I told him so.
You're sad, Hunter said accurately,
and he was picking up on all this, which shouldn't be thought of in his hearing.
Yes, we're remembering his sister, I said. She died, and we miss her.
Like my mom, he said. What's a fae?
Yes, like your mom. Sort of,
only in the sense that they were both dead.
And a fae is a special person, but we're not going to talk about that right now.
It didn't take a telepath to pick up on Claude's interest and curiosity, and when he sauntered back down the hall to use the bathroom, I followed him. Sure enough, Claude's steps slowed and stopped at the open door to the bedroom Hunter had used.
"Keep right on walking," I said.
"I can't take a peek. He'll never know. I've heard how handsome he is. Just a peek?"
"No," I said, knowing I'd better stay inside of that door until Claude was out of the house, just to peek my round, rosy ass.
"What about your ass, Aunt Sookie?"
"Whoops. Sorry, Hunter, I said a bad word."
Didn't want Claude to know I'd only thought it. I heard him laughing as he shut the bathroom door. Claude stayed in the bathroom so long that I had to let Hunter brush his teeth in mine. After I heard the squeak of the stairs and the sound of the television overhead, I was able to relax. I helped Hunter get dressed, and then I got dressed myself and put on some makeup under Hunter's unwavering attention to the process. Evidently, Kristen had never let Hunter watch what he considered to be a fascinating procedure.
"You should come to live with us, Aunt Sookie," he said.
"Thanks, Hunter, but I like to live here. I have a job."
"You can get another one."
"It wouldn't be the same. This is my house, and I love it here. I don't want to leave." There was a knock on the front door. Could Remy be arriving this early to collect Hunter? But it was another surprise altogether, an unpleasant one. Special Agent Tom Letesta stood on the front porch. Hunter, naturally, had run to the door as fast as he could. Don't all kids? He hadn't thought it was his dad, because he didn't know exactly when Remy was supposed to show up. He just liked to find out who was visiting.
"Hunter," I said, picking him up, "this is an FBI agent. His name is Tom Letesta. Can you remember that?" Hunter looked doubtful. He tried a couple of times to say the unfamiliar name and finally got it right.
"Good job, Hunter,"
Letesta said. He was trying to be friendly, but he wasn't good with kids and he sounded fake.
"Miss Stackhouse, can I come in for a minute?"
I looked behind him. No one else. I thought they always traveled in pairs. "I guess so," I said without enthusiasm. I didn't explain who Hunter was because it was none of Letesta's business, though I could tell he was curious. He'd also noticed there was another car parked outside.
"Claude," I called up the stairs, "the FBI is here."
It's good to inform unexpected company that someone else is in the house with you. The television fell silent, and Claude came gliding down the stairs. Now he was wearing a golden brown silk t-shirt and khakis, and he looked like a poster for a wet dream. Even Letesta's heterosexual orientation wasn't proof against a surge of startled admiration.
"Agent Letesta, my cousin, Claude Crane," I said, trying not to smile.
Hunter and Claude and I sat on the couch while Letesta took the lazy boy. I didn't offer him anything to drink.
"How's Agent Weiss?" I asked.
The New Orleans-based agent had brought Letesta, based in Rhodes, out to my house last time, and in the course of many terrible events, she'd been shot.
"She's back at work," Letesta said, "still on a desk job. Mr. Crane, I don't believe I've met you before."
No one forgot Claude. Of course, my cousin knew that very well.
"You haven't had the pleasure," he told the FBI man.
Letesta spent a moment trying to figure that out before he smiled.
"Right," he said. "Listen, Miss Stackhouse, I came up here today to tell you that you're no longer a subject for investigation."
I was stunned with the relief that swept over me. I exchanged glances with Claude. God bless my great-grandfather. I wondered how much he'd spent, how many strings he'd pulled to make this come true.
"How come?" I asked. "Not that I'm going to miss it, you understand, but I have to wonder what's changed."
"You seem to know people who are powerful," Letesta said, with an unexpected depth of bitterness. "Someone in our government doesn't want your name to come up in public."
"And you flew all the way to Louisiana to tell me that?"
I said, putting enough disbelief into my voice to let him know I thought that was bullshit.
"No, I flew all the way down here to go to a hearing about the shooting."
"Okay, that made more sense. And you didn't have my phone number to call me?"
You had to come here to tell me you weren't going to investigate me in person?
There's something wrong about you,
he said, and the facade was gone. It was a relief. Now his outside matched his inside.
Sarah Weiss has undergone some kind of spiritual upheaval since she met you. She goes to seances. She's reading books about the paranormal. Her husband is worried about her. The Bureau is worried about her. Her boss is having doubts about putting her back out in the field.
I'm sorry to hear that, but I don't see that there's anything I can do about it. I thought for a minute while Tom Letesta stared at me with angry eyes. He was thinking angry thoughts, too. Even if I went to her and told her that I can't do what she thinks I can do, it wouldn't help. She believes what she believes. I am what I am.
So you admit it.
Even though I didn't want the FBI noticing me, that hurt, oddly enough. I wondered if Letesta was taping our conversation. Admit what? I asked. I was genuinely curious to hear what he'd say. The first time he'd been on my doorstep, he'd been a believer. He thought I was his key to a quick rise in the Bureau.
Admit you're not even a human being.
Uh-huh. He really believed that. I disgusted and repelled him. I had more insight into what Sam was feeling.
I've been watching you, Miss Stackhouse. I've been called off, but if I can tie you into any investigation that will lead back to you, I'll do it. You're wrong. I'm leaving now, and I hope you...
He didn't get a chance to finish.
Don't think bad things about my Aunt Sookie,
Hunter said furiously.
You're a bad man.
I couldn't have put it better myself, but I wished for Hunter's own sake that he had kept his mouth shut. Letesta turned white as a sheet. Claude laughed. He's scared of you, he told Hunter. Claude thought it was a great joke, and I had a feeling he'd known what Hunter was all along. I thought Letesta's grudge might constitute a real danger to me. Thanks for coming to give me the good news, Special Agent Letesta, I said in as mild a voice as I could manage. You have a safe drive back to Baton Rouge, or New Orleans, or wherever you flew in. Letesta was on his feet and out the door before I could say another word, and I handed Hunter to Claude and followed him. Letesta was down the steps and at his car, fumbling around in his pocket, before he realized I was behind him. He was turning off a pocket recording device. He wheeled around to give me an angry look.
You'd use a kid? He said. That's low.
I looked at him sharply for a minute. Then I said, You're worried that your little boy, who's Hunter's age, has autism. You're scared this hearing you came to attend will go badly for you and maybe for Agent Weiss. You're scared because you reacted to Claude. You're thinking of asking to transfer into the BVA in Louisiana. You're mad that I know people who can make you back off. If Letesta could have pressed himself into the metal of the car, he would have. I'd been a fool because I'd been proud. I should have let him go without a word. I wish I could tell you who it was who put me off limits to the FBI, I said. It would scare your pants off. In for a penny, in for a pound, right? I turned and went back up the front steps and into the house. A moment later, I heard his car tear down my driveway, probably scattering my beautiful gravel as it went. Hunter and Claude were laughing in the kitchen, and I found them blowing with straws into the dishwashing water in the sink, which still had some soap bubbles. Hunter was standing on a stool I used to reach the top shelves of the cabinets. It was an unexpectedly happy picture.
So, cousin, he's gone? Claude asked.
Good job, Hunter. I think there's a lake monster under the water.
Hunter blew even harder, and water drops spattered the curtains. He laughed a little too wildly. Okay, kids, enough, I said. This was getting out of hand. Leave a fairy alone with a child for a few minutes, and this was what happened. I glanced at the clock. Thanks to Hunter's early wake-up call, it was only 9. I didn't expect Remy to come collect Hunter until late afternoon.
Let's go to the park, Hunter.
Claude looked disappointed that I'd stopped their fun, but Hunter was game to go somewhere. I grabbed my softball mitt and a ball and retied Hunter's sneakers.
Am I invited too?
Claude said, sounding a little miffed. I was taken by surprise. Sure you can come, I said. That would be great. Maybe you should take your own car since I don't know what we'll be doing afterward.
My self-absorbed cousin genuinely enjoyed being with Hunter. I would never have anticipated this reaction, and truthfully, I don't think he had anticipated it either. Claude followed me in his Impala as I drove to the park. I went to Magnolia Creek Park, which stretched on either side of the creek. It was prettier than the little park close to the elementary school. The park wasn't much, of course, since Bonton is not exactly a wealthy little town, but it had the standard playground equipment, a quarter-mile walking track, and plenty of open area, picnic tables, and trees. Hunter attacked the jungle gym as if he'd never seen one before, and maybe he hadn't. Red Ditch is smaller and poorer than Bonton. I found that Hunter could climb like a monkey. Claude was ready to steady him at every move. Hunter would have found that annoying if I'd done it. I wasn't sure why that should be, but I knew it to be true. A car pulled up as I enticed Hunter down from the jungle gym to play ball. Tara got out and came over to see what we were doing.
"Who's your friend, Sookie?"
she called. The tight top she was wearing made Tara look a little bigger than she had when she'd come into the bar to eat lunch. She was wearing some pre-pregnancy shorts scooted down under her belly. I knew extra money wasn't plentiful in the Durone Thornton household these days, but I hoped Tara could find money in the budget to get some real maternity clothes before too long. Unfortunately, her clothing store, Tara's Togs, didn't carry maternity stuff.
"This is my cousin Hunter," I said. "Hunter, this is my friend Tara."
Claude, who'd been swinging on the swing set, chose that moment to leap off and bound over to where we stood.
"Tara, this is my cousin Claude."
Now, Tara had known me all her life, and she knew all the members of my family. I gave her high points for absorbing this introduction and giving Hunter a friendly smile, which she then extended to Claude. She must have recognized him. She'd seen him in action, but she never blinked.
"How many months are you?" Claude asked.
"A little more than 3 months away from delivery," Tara said and sighed. I guess Tara had gotten used to relative strangers asking her personal questions. She'd told me before that all conversational bars were removed when you were pregnant.
"People will ask you anything," she'd said, "and the women will tell you labor and delivery stories that make your hair curl."
"Do you want to know what you're having?"
Claude asked.
That was way out of bounds.
"Claude," I said reprovingly, "that's too personal." Fairies just didn't have the same concept of personal information or personal space that humans did.
"I apologize," my cousin said, very insincerely. "I thought you might enjoy knowing before you buy their clothes. You color code babies, I believe."
"Sure," Tara said abruptly. "What sex is the baby?"
"Both," he said with a smile. "You're having twins, a boy and a girl."
"My doctor's heard only one heartbeat," she said, trying to be gentle about telling him he was wrong.
"Then your doctor is an idiot," Claude said cheerfully. "You have two babies, alive and well."
Tara obviously didn't know what to make of this.
"I'll get him to look harder next time I go in," she said, "and I'll tell Sookie to let you know what he says."
Fortunately, Hunter had mostly ignored this conversation. He had just learned how to throw the softball up in the air and catch it, and he was distracted by the effort to put my mitt on his little hand.
"Did you play baseball, Aunt Sookie?"
he asked.
"Softball," I said.
"You bet I did. I played right field. That means I stood way out in the field and waited to see if the girl batting would hit the ball out my way. Then I'd catch it, and I'd throw it into the pitcher, or whichever player needed it most."